Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer? Whenever I want?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. 94% of Sleep Number smart sleepers report better sleep. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. To find a store near you, visit sleepnumber.com.
In tropical meteorology, the term rapid intensification describes a tropical cyclone that does just that. It rapidly intensifies. The official definition is a tropical system whose maximum sustained winds increase by at least 35 miles per hour in a 24-hour period. Sometimes, though, it's much more intense. And in 2023, Hurricane Otis in the eastern Pacific saw its winds increase by 115 miles per hour in less than 24 hours before slamming into Mexico as a rare Category 5 storm. While Hurricane Idalia intensified by 55 miles per hour as a tropical from a tropical storm to a Category 5 hurricane in the day before making landfall in Florida's Big Bend. The how and the why some storms rapidly intensify is still shrouded in a bit of mystery. And here today to help us unveil a bit of that, we welcome Falco Jutt, a research meteorologist at the National Center for Atmospheric Research. Falco, welcome to our Weather Geeks podcast. Glad to have you.
Thank you, Jen.
So we start every Weather Geeks podcast with a simple question, which is, how did you become a weather geek?
Well, I have to go back probably to my childhood days. It's a fairly typical story. I grew up in Germany. I was interested in physics, the world outside, but also geography and maps. And I think meteorology is where this all comes together. The weather, the maps, the physics of the atmosphere. And then growing up in Germany, I'm a tropical meteorologist now. Growing up there, there's no hurricanes, tropical weather, but I've always had this inclination to study the tropics. I like the warmth. I like the storminess. So I've become a tropical meteorologist.
Yeah, so interesting here. I'm glad you addressed that because that was a question I had for you, is how did someone who grew up in Germany want to learn about hurricanes? Had you seen them, you know, whether in the news or did you travel someplace that experienced one, or how did you really get a liking for tropical weather?
So I think it was Hurricane Andrew in 92. I was in elementary school back then. And I just remember vaguely seeing on the news, which was pretty much the only thing I was allowed to watch at the time, the destruction in the Miami area, Homestead. And then a couple of years later, I actually traveled to Florida on a family vacation, and I saw these signs of hurricane evacuation routes on the roads. And all these things came together and just really instilled in me the wanting of studying hurricanes. And in the end, that's what happened.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Let me, for our listeners and viewers, I'll run through some of your background. Right now, you're a research meteorologist in the mesoscale and microscale meteorology laboratory at the National Center for Atmospheric Research, otherwise known as NCAR. His interests are in tropical meteorology, atmospheric predictability, and more broadly, the science behind weather prediction. Now, you went on to study in Miami, so you got your PhD meteorology and oceanography in 2014 from the Rosenstiel School at the University of Miami. And I believe you got your master's there as well. But your undergrad was in Germany in physics, right, at Leipzig University?
That's correct, yeah. So it was in meteorology, but meteorology is a part of physics there. It's not its independent program. So my background is more or less in physics with a few classes in meteorology.
I think a lot of meteorologists would say that the physics classes are some of the hardest classes that they have to take and in preparation for the meteorology classes. So you did that as a whole undergrad. That's very impressive. And your work is very impressive. And so that's why we're here to talk with you today, actually, is about some of the work that you have been doing in studying rapid intensification and hurricanes. So first question on that is it a mystery as to why we see rapid intensifications, or do we really know more than we sort of give the atmosphere credit for?
That's a good question. I think it's still a mystery, but I think we also know some things about it. So I would say the answer to your question is yes and no. It's still a mystery, and we know that because we're bad at forecasting these rapid intensification episodes. We still are. Sometimes they still happen very surprisingly and catching the experts at the National Hurricane Center off guard. But we also know something about it. We know the factors that have to come together to make a storm intensify rapidly. Now, the thing is, we know the ingredients on the large scale, but then all the inner workings of the hurricanes, they also matter, and we don't really know what's going on inside. And that's where still a lot of our problems lie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and there's, I think, levels of observing and measuring, you know, that we need to address in terms of, you know, trying to figure out what's happening within the storm. You mentioned that, you know, there's still ones that catch us off guard. And I talked about Hurricane Otis in the start of the show. Hurricane Otis was the one that hit Acapulco as a Category 5, and very unexpectedly. This was the storm that every meteorologist got up the next day, like, what just happened? That was a tropical storm and not expected to be much more than a strong tropical storm. And, you know, and so in that case, you know, was it just the observations weren't there, do you think? What sort of, even the models didn't pick up on it. You know, what was getting defied here?
Good question. We don't really know. So Otis is really one of these really bad cases where we had no indications. And you were right. Like all the models were saying there's pretty much no chance of rapid intensification when this blow up happened. So I think it's a good research question. We actually have to go back, look in the models, what happened there. Can we get the models to reproduce this rapid intensification of Otis? So it's a head scratcher, and it's probably going to be studied for quite some time. But I don't really know what went wrong. You can always make the assumption that, oh, we don't really have good data. It's an Eastern Pacific hurricane, so we don't have the hurricane hunters flying the storm, so we don't get good in situ observations from the storm itself. That could be a reason, but I'm not sure. I doubt it's the only reason. So again, it's we don't really know what went wrong, and it's going to be studied for quite some time.
Yeah, that will no doubt be the topic of so many research papers, and something that your professors talk about in college classes here is, you know, kind of going back and outlining and sort of doing the detective work and forensic work of what happened. You know, some one thing you talked about was the hurricane hunters, and they were in there, and they were really the only piece of data that gave us a clue, like, wow, this is stronger than it's supposed to be in the modeling. It's stronger than it even looks from a satellite perspective. So their data is so critical. And oftentimes it's really the data, the only data that we have about the strength of a hurricane, no matter what the basin is. If it's out in the broad Atlantic, there's not even many buoys out there. And maybe there's a ship here or there, but, you know, using satellite data to estimate how strong things are. So, you know, that's one of the challenges, I think. What do you think about that in terms of, do we even know how the rapid intensification occurs in storms that don't have a plethora of data?
Right. Yeah. So that's one of the problems. We have the storms, we have the planes that fly into the storms, but they're only in the storm for a couple of hours. Then they have to head back. And then there's this gap. And then the plane comes back and we realize, oh, this storm has started to rapidly intensify, but we haven't really caught that beginning. That's really the problem. We don't really know what sets the rapid intensification off. So ideally, we would have long-range drones that could just loiter in the storm for hours, for a day, So we don't have this problem of very sporadic observations anymore. I send a plane in, get some data, but we don't have this round-the-clock system with the aircraft. We could think maybe satellites, they're always up there in space. They're always looking down. But satellites, the issue with the satellites is they only look at the top of the hurricane. They can tell us something, but they can't tell us the details. So each observation system has its pros and cons. It would be nice to have more planes that sample the swarm continuously. I think that would really help understanding what starts rapid intensification.
That would probably solve a lot of forecast problems around the globe, actually, if we just had continuous data everywhere. Now, in the recent study and the one that we wanted to talk about here, you talked about the point that trying to find the holy grail behind rapid intensification is the wrong approach because there isn't just one holy grail. And I thought that was a really interesting perspective. You sort of identified different ways that a storm can undergo rapid intensification. What would be the ideal scenario for a storm to undergo rapid intensification?
So the ideal way, as we understand it now, is when we have a weak cyclone, a tropical storm that sits over a warm ocean surface, 85, 86 degrees, so really warm, juicy water. And the surrounding of the atmosphere is really moist, but quiescent. So we don't have what we call wind shear, where the wind blows from different directions at different levels in the atmosphere. If a hurricane just sits there undisturbed over a warm ocean, it will undergo rapid intensification. So the question really is, why do not all storms undergo rapid intensification? That's because we always have something that's not ideal. The real world is never as ideal as we can simulate in our idealized computer models. So if a storm sits over warm water, there's very little wind shear, and there's a moist atmosphere surrounding it, we can be certain that it will undergo rapid intensification.
So the next question will be about how do storms rapid intensify when there's not an ideal environmental situation? We're going to take a quick break, Falco. When we come back here, we'll tackle that.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to our Weather Geeks podcast. I'm meteorologist Jen Carfagno today hosting, and I'm talking to Falco Judd. He's a meteorologist with NCAR, and we're talking about rapid intensification. So we talked about the ideal scenario in the atmosphere for a storm to undergo rapid intensification. And it's the things we all sort of assume, right? Really warm water, low shear, you know, not a lot of perturbations to disrupt the storm. It has its time, its space, it can do its thing. But what kind of environment allows a storm to rapidly intensify if the conditions are not ideal?
So I'll back off a little bit. I already described the ideal scenario. It turns out the atmosphere is almost never ideal. So we can have a little bit of shear, some dry air. The storm will still, maybe not, we're not 100% sure that it will rapidly intensify, but a lot of these storms actually do. When the shear is below some threshold, when the dry air is below some threshold, there's still a good chance that a storm could rapidly intensify. Now, what we found in this study that you were addressing a short while ago is when the conditions are really bad, usually we assume, well, there's no way a storm can undergo rapid intensification. But in the study found, there's actually a second flavor of rapid intensification. And a storm can rapidly intensify when the conditions are really bad, when there's very strong shear and very dry air lurking around. And this is, we call it the sprint type of rapid intensification, because in this case, there's an inner core restructuring going on, a center reformation, and suddenly things come together, even though there's strong shear and dry air, and a storm becomes upright. Storm likes to be upright to intensify, and then there's a jump in intensity, and it happens really quick. Within maybe 3 hours, we go from a tropical storm to a Cat 1. So that's really the sprint type of rapid intensification. We're intensifying very quickly, but thankfully we're not likely to go to a major hurricane because the environmental conditions are still not very good for an intense storm. It's just that intensification happens very rapidly within a few hours, and we're going maybe up two categories.
So you call the first scenario a marathon, right?
Right.
And then this is the sprint,
right?
When, you know, there's a small window where it can happen. And even in the face of non-perfect conditions.
Correct. Yes.
The marathon and the sprint. How did you come to discover those two multiple scenarios?
So that was actually an accidental finding, as it often happens in science, I think. So I had a simulation, a very realistic simulation, a global simulation, modeling the global atmosphere for 40 days with a very high resolution model. And I was just data mining that simulation to look at the factors that need to happen for a storm to intensify rapidly. And when I was going into that simulation, into the data, and I plotted all the intensification of the hurricanes that were in the data, I noticed that some of them are doing this marathon from a tropical storm to a major hurricane, and some of them did this jump, this sprint. And I hadn't really set out to find this. It just happened to come out of the data mining process. And then we were looking at it, and we noticed, like, oh, there's, you know, if you're squinting your eyes, those two intensification ways fall into two camps, the marathon and the sprint.
Do most, if not all, rapid intensification processes kind of fall into one of those, either the marathon or the sprint?
Not really. So it's more a spectrum. So some of them have aspects of a sprint, and some of them have some. Well, you can get essentially mixed athletes that do a little bit of a sprint.
Mixed athletes.
Yeah,
I like that.
That do a little bit of a sprint early on, then continue with a marathon, and the other way around. So it's really an ideal view. You know, in science, we try to put everything into categories neatly marked, but nature is more messy. So there's this broad spectrum. But nonetheless, you can find storms that really adhere to one of the two modes, but you can also find crossover and have these mixed athletes.
Yeah, it's funny. I find this analogy actually quite good when it comes to comparing a hurricane to an athlete, because, you know, you need good fuel. An athlete needs to eat healthy food. Here, the hurricane needs warm water. You need to stay hydrated, and an athlete is drinking the Gatorade, and the hurricane needs a saturated atmosphere. So all these things kind of line up here. I like that. Is it possible for, you think, one storm to go through both of those modes? Like, I know there's a spectrum, but, you know, could a storm in its evolution and its transport go through the marathon stage of rapid intensification and then at a later date go through the sprint?
It could. I think the other way is more likely, that you start out with a sprint first, because the marathon really is a long distance phenomenon where we go from tropical storm to, let's say, category four. So there's not really much room to do another sprint after that. But you can do a sprint from tropical storm to category one or two, and then continue a marathon all the way to category five. I think that's possible. I really haven't looked at data if that happens. Mm-hmm. But there's certainly these mixed types. They certainly exist.
I'm sure you're looking back at a lot of historical data. Do you think it's true that, you know, most storms that achieve category five, even category four status, go through some level of rapid intensification?
Yes, I don't really, you know, I'm not a person who has all the data in their head, but I think every category five storm is an RI case, a rapid intensification case. And of the major hurricanes, the vast majority get there by going through this rapid intensification phase.
When we look at the hurricane forecast, and, you know, those from the National Hurricane Center, which, you know, is the final word when it comes to providing a forecast to the public, you know, their point forecast and their location forecast continues to improve. And that's so good. And people actually kind of get spoiled by that. But we all know that there's still a lot of challenges when it comes to intensity forecasting. And so rapid intensification is just actually one piece of that intensity forecasting. Have you discovered any of the other factors that are a challenge in creating an intensity forecast for hurricanes?
Yeah, so actually the opposite happens too, where we have rapid weakening. It's not as dramatic because it won't scare people as much. It's, you know, it's good when you hear, well, it's only a tropical storm instead of a Cat 3. But that happens too, where a storm suddenly really weakens very quickly, loses all its steam, and we don't really know why. So the opposite of rapid intensification, we call it rapid weakening. We're also bad at forecasting those events. And then in general, just being able to tell a storm that's of moderate intensity, will it keep intensifying or will it level off? I think because so many things really have to line up to get a good intensity forecast. We need good data, good forecast models. They're good, but they're not very good. So that's in general why we have so many problems, because intensity really is determined by the inner workings of the storm. And we talked about the aircraft, but they're not in there all the time. So there's a limitation of data that really limits us then in regard to intensity forecast.
And, you know, when it comes to intensity, it's, we're putting an intensity on a hurricane. We're giving it one number. Okay, this is the wind speed. This is the category. But we know that the effects of it vary based on the size of it, how much rainfall it's bringing. I mean, the waves and storm surge that it generates. So in terms of rapid intensification, in terms of like the impacts to people, there's so many different facets involved in it. Have you found that size matters when it comes to rapid intensification?
I believe there's I personally haven't looked at that, but I believe there's a study that showed that smaller storms are more likely to intensify rapidly. So smaller storms, for some reason, have less inertia. Maybe that's how we can conceptualize it. So if a storm is small, it can go up and down intensity more quickly than bigger storms. So there's an element of size to it, but I don't know much about the details. I haven't looked into that.
Well, I understand that you have a keen interest in forecasting clouds specifically. I know that you've been looking at global cloud resolving models and how they work in general weather prediction. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to chat more about that.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
To our Weather Geeks podcast. Today, I'm talking to Falko Jutt. He's a scientist and meteorologist who works at NCAR and focusing on extreme weather prediction and tropical weather prediction. And in our discussion about rapid intensification, it has occurred to me that, you know, there's actually just a lot we can't observe about what's happening in a hurricane. And that's not breaking news. Everybody knows that. But so much is happening at these really small, not just mesoscale level, but microscale level in the clouds and in the thunderstorms themselves. So I understand that this is a passion of yours, is the, you know, prediction of really cloud resolution. Can we do that? I mean, can we use numerical modeling to predict individual clouds?
Yes, if you think of a cloud as a box that's a few miles wide. So we can forecast individual cloud complexes or thunderstorms like the big boomers. Individual cumulus clouds that are really small and are changing very fast, we're not there yet. But we can now, with global models that used to not be able to do this, we can actually explicitly simulate thunderstorms and deep convection in global models. So, yes.
And so, you know, that begs the question then, you know, if we can get down to that scale, how will that improve tropical weather prediction?
So I think it will drastically improve tropical weather prediction, not just hurricanes, but just in general, tropical weather. We tend to think about it as kind of boring. Yeah, it's always warm. It rains almost every day. But in fact, tropical weather has dry periods, has moist periods, and these are caused by, we call features, equatorial waves. So traveling disturbances along the equator. And current models like the GFS or the European model, the ECMWF, are really bad at forecasting those phenomena. But global cloud resolving models have shown that they're actually capturing these waves very nicely. If we get bigger computers and can run these models not just in research mode but in an operational mode, I think there's big gains that we can be made in terms of tropical weather forecasting, especially precipitation.
Yeah, What's your thoughts on AI and tropical weather prediction?
Good question. I am one of those more skeptical types. I think AI will be one way we get our forecasts. I'm not sure if it will replace the current way of doing it, running the models. I might be wrong. So I think AI is one extra tool in our arsenal to make weather forecasts in general. Now, for tropical forecasts in more specifically, I really don't know. I don't want to lean one way or the other.
I think that's where a lot of the industry is right now. You know, there's so much to be discovered about how it could be used, and you need to see it in practice and be successful before you place any trust in it. It also just, I mean, from my perspective, it seems like tropical weather is finicky. You know, yes, I don't know. A thunderstorm here can, one small thunderstorm could impact the strength of a big hurricane. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's just a lot of factors at play. So, it seems like the case where rules won't necessarily be able to be applied on a regular basis, but maybe they will. So I'm excited about what's to come with that. Okay, so continuing the really hard questions that you probably weren't expecting. Did you hear the latest news that came out of a recent meeting of scientists that maybe there should be a Category 6 hurricane?
I did hear about the chatter. It's impossible to not hear about it if you're in the field of tropical meteorology.
I had to ask you your thoughts on that one.
My thoughts are, I think, I don't want to speak for others, but I think our energy that should be invested in trying to improve forecasts and really look at the impacts, telling people about the impacts a hurricane can have, rather than putting everything into one category from 1 for 5 or maybe 6. So I don't necessarily disagree with the science behind it, that global warming makes storms stronger and there now could be a reason to have a 6th category. But I think it's distracting from the more important stuff, like improving forecasts and telling people about the impact. So to me, it's a little bit of a distraction, but I don't want to say, oh, it's wrong, we shouldn't do it. Yeah.
You know, it sparks conversation, which I think is always good to get people talking and thinking about it.
Up front.
Right. No, we're getting close to hurricane season. And I think your point is a very solid one, which is, you know, the message that needs to get across is the impacts. And that's not always directly related to what category we're at. Mm-hmm. A category of a very slow moving category 1 storm with a lot of rainfall that could cause flooding is, you know, can be just as impactful as maybe a category 3 or even 4, you know, with the wind damage that it brings. So it's not clear cut for sure. Thank you for answering that one. It's definitely caused us here at the Weather Channel to chat about it. And there's lots of opinions.
I can't imagine.
And, you know, one opinion is that, well, you know, especially in the Western Pacific, we do see these storms that sort of defy the odds and get up to that strength. And with warming waters, are we going to see those kind of tropical systems, not just in the Western Pacific, but in other basins? And, you know, to tie it all back around to rapid intensification, if we have these more intensely and off the charts warm waters in the Atlantic, are we going to see more hurricanes that have the possibility of rapidly intensifying?
So I'm not an expert on the climate aspect of hurricanes, but as far as I know, yes, warmer ocean temperatures, everything else equal, mean we should see more rapid intensification cases and more intense storms. But again, that's under the premise everything else is equal, but everything else is not equal, so that makes it very difficult to disentangle. And I'm not up to speed with the most recent literature, but I think the general consensus still is that maybe the number of storms may not increase, but the intensification rate could increase and the top intensity could increase.
That's exactly what, it seems to be coming out these days. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that ties back into if warm water is a key piece of information or key piece of environment needed for rapid intensification, then if we have it, if everything else is just right, it seems like there's more opportunity.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. This is a really good discussion. Thank you, Falco. Sure. I do have one more question for you. You live in Boulder, and you have lived in Florida, obviously going to school, and you lived in Germany, and you have this keen observation of clouds, I think. So what are your favorite types of clouds, and what city have you enjoyed spotting the clouds the best in?
That's actually very easy. I would say Miami, so the tropics. I'm a tropical guy at heart. I love clouds, but I also love the ocean, the beach. Now, Boulder is very far from the beach. So I definitely enjoy those really deep convective clouds that give us the nice thunderstorms and the heavy rains. Boulder is too dry to get those. On the other hand, we have snow. I'm looking outside. Yes, it's snow covered. I'm a skier too, so there's good things to be had here too. I love tropical weather, and tropical weather means deep convection, big thunderstorms, heavy rainfall.
I agree. There's nothing as majestic as just the cumulus and cumulonimbus and cumulonimbus clouds building up in the sky. Mm-hmm. We don't have quite the level that you did in Miami, but in the Atlanta area where I am, I love that mm-hmm. late spring, early summer sky. It is just majestic. That's the only way to describe it. It's like our mountains. You have the mountains in Boulder, but that's our mountains.
Fully agree.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on Weather Geeks. What is the best way for anyone to follow your work or maybe find you on social media?
I'm on Twitter/X. I think my handle is Cloud Prophet. So you can find me there. Also, my name, you can Google my name. I think I'm the only person in the whole world with this first name, last name combination. I should be relatively easy to find. I would say just Google my name or go on Twitter, search for my name, and you'll find me there.
Cloud Prophet. Cloud Prophet. That's a great handle.
One of the O's is a zero, though, because Cloud Prophet with just letters was already taken, sadly.
What? perfect. Well, Falco Judd, a.k.a. the Cloud Prophet, seriously, thank you so much today. Enjoy this discussion on rapid intensification, and we'll see what this next season brings. We are maybe getting out of an El Nino into a La Nina and warm waters. We might be reaching out again if we have a lot of storms that go through rapid intensification.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. And to everyone who's listening and watching, thank you for joining us for this edition of Weather Geeks. We will see you next time.